All right, let's go ahead and get started. Tonight is the last night of this four-week series. Is Jesus a Democrat, an Independent, or a Republican? We answered that the first week. In the first couple minutes, the answer is yes. I said to you that he is, in that moment, whatever you make him, you take him into the voting booth with you. We went back again to the book of John. You'll know the truth will set you free. The flip side of that is true. If you don't know the truth, then you will be in bondage. And so the quest always becomes, how do we know the truth? We went on a depressing journey for 2 weeks through the Holocaust, but some of the reasons that that happened. And talked then, kind of transitioned out of that, and talked about the fact that that we as Christians have a responsibility coming up even next week. Next week? Yeah, 2 weeks? 2 weeks, right? Two weeks. To step once again back into the voting booth or vote early or whatever, we have a responsibility to take that seriously. And how do we do that in a world that sometimes is a little bit crazy? Political seasons get nuts. We made the point that very often our politics and our religion kind of collides, and we don't know who to believe anymore. And I suggested to you that the low bar that we ought to expect from our politicians is the truth. And we ought to learn to look for that if we can. And we talked about the fact that if you lie to Congress, it's felony. And if they lie to us, it's just politics. And there's something seriously wrong with that. And so we talked about that as well. I told you that I have a political agenda. I want to start with that again, and then we'll kind of pick up. I'm going to show you a diagram here that we'll, you know, talk about that a little bit too. But I preface it by saying that a country that doesn't believe in its founding ideals cannot prosper and survive. That is true. I think the statement was made last week. John really did add a lot to that and rounded out. We actually talked about it again in filling station on Sunday evening, that the American system, it rocks. Our founding fathers had something very important happening in the world. It was a God-inspired moment. We have built the foundation of this nation on Judeo-Christian principles that sometimes we don't like to talk about anymore, not us, but we collectively as Americans. And what happens is we get into trouble when we try to do things because we're trying to fit them into a system that it just doesn't work. You've got to have that Judeo-Christian foundation for truth to work. And so if we're going to survive, we have to hold on to those founding ideals. And so my agenda is simple. I want our current and future leaders to embrace and live up to our core principles as Americans. That's rooted in Judeo-Christian beliefs, as written by the founding fathers, set up in the Constitution. I want to hold those leaders accountable for what they do. And I pray that people who follow God will bring their politics under the lordship of Christ, which means that's how we start looking at things. And that's not red and that's not blue. That's Jesus. And that's my agenda. And so building on that idea, we've talked about a number of things. We shared the idea with you, and we'll kind of talk about that again, that your vote is not a Valentine. You are not confessing your love for a candidate. Instead, it is a chess move. And it's a chess move for the world that you want to live in. And you have to start looking at your vote like that, because if not, you've lost perspective of what it is. Now, on the occasion of America's 100th birthday, its centennial address to Congress in 1876, the president was James A. Garfield, and he issued a warning that was widely reported in the press at that time, and he said this, I quote, "Now more than ever before, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body is ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in their national legislature." Then he added, "If 100 years from now, at the next centennial, if the next centennial does not find us a great nation, it will be because those who represent the enterprise, the culture, and the morality of the nation do not aid in controlling the political forces. In other words, we get what we vote for. We get what we expect. And so, if you look at Congress and go, Congress is nuts. Well, we elected them nuts. And there are nuts. And we have some responsibility for it. And so that's why the power of the vote matters. That's why understanding it matters. And that's why what we're doing, at least this discussion, has some importance. Now, I told you we're going to get some issues tonight. We are. My goal tonight, as we talk about issues, is not to tell you how to vote. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm going to throw out some things that for you to think about. And you know what? It's okay if you disagree with those things and thoughts. As long as you bring those under the lordship of Christ and you get your faith where it needs to be in that, I mean, you can settle that with God. And I'm just going to throw out some ideas, thoughts. Don't you just love it when no one has to have the answers? They're just throwing out ideas, right? And so that's how I get off the hook tonight. But I want to show you something that might or might not help you. It could screw you up worse than you might already be screwed up. But if it's helpful, it's a win. And it's this little diagram here. I know you guys already looked at it a couple times wondering what the heck is going on with that. And so let me kind of explain it to you. That line in the middle is a cultural continuum. Okay, this line right here represents our culture. We are living in what a lot of people consider a postmodern culture today. But this line represents our culture. So let me give you some kind of definitions. And then what I'm going to do with it is explain it. And then I'm going to put some of our past presidents or politicians into this diagram to give you an idea of where people fit. Okay. At the top, we have what is modern culture, or you might want to say modernism. And understand the cultural continuum rises and falls. Okay, there's always a constant tug and pull on it. But modernism favors a world of rationalism, scientific inquiry, and discovery. That happens about here. But the more we pursue those things, and the more important those things become, we also then, in a modern culture, begin to reject religious beliefs and private beliefs, and we sacrifice those on the altar of advancement and progress. So in other words, at this end of the, you know, when you start in the center, if you start in the center, the advancement, the breakthroughs are all important. But then at some point, they become more important than the belief system that you're leaving behind. Okay, because this line represents your belief system. All right? That's modern culture. Postmodernism pulls it in the other direction. Postmodernism begins to reject the claims that history, the past, or progress, it begins to think that those things don't have as much meaning, that those aren't valuable lessons for our future, that those are things that are things of the past, but they have no value in the present. We don't need to learn from them, and therefore we don't need to hold tight to them. That is postmodern culture. It begins to let loose of these things. Now, here's the irony of that, though. For a postmodern culture, they still want to hold on to all of the advancements that the modern culture's made. They don't want to give that up. But what it is, it's a pull away from the value of what it took to get there. Don't believe me? We live in a world right now, we don't have a kid that's born that doesn't understand, or doesn't, once he gets old enough, doesn't understand what high-speed internet is. They've done nothing to earn that. They just know if they can't hold their tablet and see whatever they want to see, their life stinks. They don't know what it's like to walk around and not have a cell phone. They don't remember the cell phones, the old Ericsson phones that looked about this big, that looked like bricks, right? You know? I remember going on a disaster relief thing with John Barber, and he had a satellite phone. Man, that's the only thing that kept us connected, because, I mean, I was before, I mean, there was no, I mean, we had no way to get in contact with anybody. That thing was about this big, wasn't it, John? I mean, it seemed like it was bigger than the vehicle, right?
A bigger battery.
So this postmodern culture doesn't want to let loose of any of the advancements, but they don't have any value for what it took to get there. Okay? And this is a constant pull, up and down. We live through this. Now again, this middle line I told you, though, is a little bit different, because this is the continuum is your belief system. It's what centers you. Okay? And so you are, if you go to the left, I put on the right, on the left side. The left would be a liberal point of view. The right is a conservative point of view. And then if you find yourself meeting in the middle, you try to balance those kind of views out. Okay. Now, this diagram actually comes from political science, is where it comes from. So what I'm doing is I'm putting a spiritual filter on it to help us a little bit. Because when you then break it into quadrants, right, if you take the modern liberal quadrant, the theme here is progress. The idea is you can change the world. People in this quadrant, that's what they, that's how they live their life. If you get to this side, the modernism and conservative side, it's responsibility. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Take responsibility for yourself. That's what the belief system is here. Liberal postmodern is equality. If there's no justice, there will be no peace. It will be fair. It will be fair for us. That's what happens in this quadrant here. In this quadrant over here, conservative postmodern security. My gut tells me what's true. I know what's right. I'm all about security. That's the driving force. And what happens is that depending on who you are and depending on what age you live in, there are times that this wave begins to go up and down. Again, it starts pulling away from your personal belief system. It starts getting away from you at some point, and you have to react to that. Culture's always reacting, okay? And you say, well, what does that have to do with us? Everything to do with us, because when you start thinking about it, you can actually take some presidents that I'm aware of or politicians I'm aware of, and you can put them on this quadrant. You can put them in this model, and it helps understand. But here's what you have to remember. If you go all the way back to the book of Genesis, each one of these concepts is biblical. Okay? You go back to the very beginning of the Garden of Eden, how God set the whole thing up. There is progress. You are going to populate the world. You're going to be fruitful and multiply. You're going to shape this garden I have given you. You're going to shape the world. That's a biblical concept. Responsibility? Oh, yeah, you're going to work. You're going to work and you're going to tend the garden and you're going to take responsibility and you have some responsibility. Matter of fact, stay away from that tree. Because you have a choice in this thing. You have responsibility, a biblical concept. Security, your gut. You will know right from wrong. I will help you, God says, know right from wrong. I will teach you right from wrong, and you are to do right, not do wrong. Don't do what's right in your eyes. Do what's right in my eyes. You will know this. It will be this is who you are. It's your core of your being. You know. And you can be secure in me. It's a promise from God. And then equality. There has to be. God deals with us equally. He doesn't deal with me any different than he deals with you. There is equality. He loves his creation. He loves mankind. He died for us. There's equality. All of these are biblical principles. All part of our Judeo-Christian foundation as a nation. So if you ask the question, where is Jesus then in this model? Right here in the middle. Jesus is in the middle of the model. Because Jesus would be that perfect balance, right? That's the target. The perfect balance where all these things begin to work. Opinions. Jesus isn't ultra-conservative. He's not ultra-liberal. I had a professor at seminary tell me that Jesus was a socialist. And I was the one in the class that said, you're out of your mind. And he said, does anybody agree with Mr. Dixon? And not one student would agree with me. And he said, he's the only one that gets the A for the day. I wanted to see if any of you would push back on me. I couldn't have made a more dumb statement than I just made, but none of you wanted to call me on it because you're so worried about the grade. Obviously, Mr. Dixon doesn't care about his grades.
That's why you take out the trash.
And that's so true. But again, so Jesus is the middle, right? So for us as followers, my suggestion is that we have to be like Christ. So we, in some sense, are always looking for the middle, or the balance of these kind of things. Think about the politicians that you've heard of. Think about I'll give you some I know in my lifetime. I think back to the responsibility thing. This was characterized by Ronald Reagan. Okay? Spell it right? Reagan. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Take responsibility. Tear down that dumb wall. You know, we're going to be a city on a hill. It is that American, Reagan kind of came in and restored that American, we are American and we're proud. It's only in a Reagan era that you get a character in the movies like John Rambo, and he becomes a hero, right? That's where that's where Stallone made it, right? I mean, that's where Rambo emerges from. Rambo takes on the world because the Americans are the best, and we're responsible for everybody else. That's Reagan. But as we move away from Reagan, there was another president that comes into the mix. Bill Clinton, the boy from Hope, Arkansas, from a little place called Hope. But the idea was progress, right? Change the world. I mean, that was part of that, you know, I'm a Bubba, I'm from Arkansas, you know, I'm just a good old boy, but I'm different. I've got that Midwestern roots kind of thing going on. And I'm going to be different. And he came in, and that was that message that Clinton seemed to share. And so in my lifetime, you know, Reagan is at one quadrant. Clinton then becomes the other part of the quadrant. Time changes. And so we come away from Clinton, and we move back a little bit. We come back down a little bit toward the belief line a little bit. And this would be where you would put George W. Bush. Because think about what happened. 9/11 happened. Because if you remember back in politics and you really enjoyed politics back in the day, Bush took a beating for the fact that he said, "We are not the world's policeman. My job is not to take care of the world. I don't want us involved in other things across the world. We're going to get everybody home. It's not our job. It's about America first." He was trying to be Reagan-esque. Except an event happened right about a year into his presidency, September 11th. And he became a wartime president overnight and was unprepared to do it. And I mean, history will be kind to him because he stepped up. He had to go into an uncharted territory to fight a war that no one knew how to fight because we never had to fight a war like that before. And we've been battling ever since. And it was a war on terror, and we'd never seen anything like that. But he comes back then pushing responsibility, but at the same time, he started to move down that security quadrant, right? Because security became everybody's main concern. We were all concerned about our security. We were all concerned about what was going to happen next. We didn't know if another building was going to fall. We didn't know if we were going to be at war on the homeland. And so Bush had to navigate that. But he brought us back a little bit from the quadrant and kind of got us kind of in the middle here. Come away from Bush, and there's another president that comes along. Barack Obama. Obama moves back to the left a little bit because, again, we didn't get attacked again. We felt safer again. We kind of lost a little bit of that edge. We didn't feel like we were always, you know, tensed up and ready to fight. And so Obama comes along again with the message of hope and change, right? We're going to change the world, but yet his policies a little bit to the left because he's a community organizer, right? He's got a little bit more of the social justice thing, a lot more of the social justice thing coming on. That's his background. That's where he's coming from. So he pulls us back to this way again. Trying to be centrist, but pulling us back down this way. Not like the Clintons. He wasn't like the Clintons. But very much pulling back to the center. And so now we enter this era, and so we enter this political season that we're in. And so who would you imagine is down here in this era? What politician would you put down here?
Bernie.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. Sanders is the guy. This is the Bernie Sanders quadrant now. It's down. Again, we don't need history. This is the cancel culture. It's going to be fair. It's going to be socialistic. We don't need any of this. This doesn't matter anymore. It's all about fairness, 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 and it doesn't matter what it costs. And so he's down here in this comment. So the question is, and this is always, and this is the debate right now in our political culture, though, is, you know, everybody's wondering, and it's still kind of a mystery, by the way. I mean, you can form your own opinions of it. But people talk about, where the heck is Biden at now? Because at one point, you would have put Biden here because why? He was on the ticket. Yeah. But now Biden at 74, no one seems to be sure who's running the show. And we don't know. We haven't seen him for a week. So no one knows whether it's the Sanders poll that's going to pull him down here, or whether he's really going to pull back up here to this end of the spectrum. And he's not answering that question. And so, as you're listening, yeah?
So do you think the culture of the time shaped these people, or do you think these people shape the culture?
Yes. I think they're products of their culture.
Yeah, I don't mean to. Pick on.
Oh, you're not picking on because this is right.
But the guy you just talked about, he's been in every one of those quadrants I've lived in a long time.
I think
he's squarely been in every one of those, and I sit there and I go,
"What's his deal?" Yeah.
So, but I mean, to be fair, Bush,
sure, he pulled back to here.
He got pushed into that, So sometimes events or the times shape it, but other times, because it's kind of interesting because we're all trying to be godly. But only God knows what the future is going to be and what we're going to need at that point.
Sure. And so, but Sanders and Biden maybe.
Yeah.
And then this one here, guess who goes here?
Ross Perot.
And right here in this one is squarely where we get Trump, right? I mean, has there ever been a better example of a president that always goes from his gut? And he tells you what his gut feels. And it drives some people nuts. But I mean, you know exactly what you're getting. And again, he ran on security. I'm going to build a great, big, beautiful wall. Right? I'm going to keep you safe. Most law enforcement in America, who are they siding with? Who are they endorsed? He's got every endorsement from every major law enforcement agency in America. He ran security before, huh? What's that? And again, in some ways he's still running on that today. Okay? And that's where so the goal then is, as a follower, who do you vote for? Remember, I said this is a chess move. It's not a love letter. Because I can tell you I don't love anybody on that board. But each one has been a chess move. The point you made, does culture influence them? Sure. But for us as Christians, we have to live by the Holy Spirit, and we have to navigate culture, and we have to have a sense of what God's trying to do in the culture. So who is out there that we can vote for that is going to be the next chess move that pulls us into the world that we want to be in, and it draws us back more center here? Because if Jesus is there, that's where we need to be. And so for every politician that's out there, for anybody that you're going to cast a vote for, there are a number of issues that you've got to kind of weed through and figure out what's going on.
You can't take it anymore?
What? And so that becomes the kind of where everybody kind of fits into a diagram that helps us to kind of understand, okay, this is the world that we've kind of lived in, and this is where everyone's kind of pulled and navigated. And again, if you think about it, the culture at any given time, I would tend to think right now we are living in a culture where the line, if you're going to draw a line.
Well, the line went all the way off over where Hillary is.
I mean, we're down here somewhere. I mean, we're being pulled here because if you think about it, no matter whether it's Biden or Trump, one will be elected. Both are pulling us into this postmodern pull, where there's a battle for is culture going to rise? Is it going to continue to fall? I mean, what's going to happen next? But this is the era we're living in right now. And again, the answer to the question, the culture definitely shapes these guys, and the culture shapes these guys as leaders, and they will emerge as a result. And whoever can ride that wave best and whoever figures it out ultimately ends up probably being elected. And so, I mean, that's a political science look then with a Christian lens put on top of it. Because all of these are biblical. We need to be thinking about all of these kinds of things as a follower of Christ. And so now we come back to your chess move. As you're looking at things, as you're trying to navigate things, who do you vote for? What do you do that kind of gets you closest to where you need to be? And so let me throw out a couple issues to you and let me throw some ideas out. If you want to add any, feel free. Because again, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. That's not what's coming here. I just want to give you some things to challenge your thinking. How about that? We'll start with money. How do you spend money? I don't know if it bothers you or not, but maybe it should, or at least you should think about the fact that we are living in a world right now where we are running up a huge debt as American citizens. And we seem to have a runaway spending mentality. Now, is that a product of this? Sure it is. Sure it is. And so we teach here what I think is a biblical concept of funds, right? Of resources. God gives to you what he entrusts to you to manage to the best of your ability for kingdom work. And so the question that you have, or the question you can wrestle with, is which candidate is out there that is going to divert your money toward ungodly things or godly things? Which candidate is out there advocating things that are ungodly and you know they're ungodly? Or which candidate is looking toward things that you say, you know, those are godly things. Those are good things I need to be a part of. Which candidate will allow you to use the resources that God gives you to advance the causes of the king? In other words, which candidate is going to give you the opportunity to better use your resources and manage them in a way that's going to honor God? Is there a candidate out there that puts their money where their mouth is and really does step up and live what they tell you you need to live? Do they have a lifestyle that you can tell where they are willing to help the poor, help the addicted, help the down and out? Does it take some digging? Sure it does. And so what does it mean? Well, it means that right now there is a battle that's waging between socialism and capitalism. And somewhere in the middle of that is where we find our common ground. Because yes, we are responsible for trying to do our best to take care of those that have needs. No doubt about it. What is the best way to get there, and what is the best roadmap to get there? Who has the best plan? Because when we're running up debts, they're spending your money or your children's money or your grandchildren's money. And if we're going to make the world a better place, we've got to find a candidate that gets us kind of in the middle where we can accomplish all those things, because it's possible. Because that's how God has set it up. And so vote for people who will protect that system that allows you the freedom to direct your money to the kingdom causes that you're called to participate in. Now, does that mean we're talking about taxes? Yes. Does that mean we're talking about spending? Yes. Does that mean we're talking about bailouts? Yes. Does it mean we're talking about not bailing out? Yeah. I mean, we're talking about all of those things. But one of those things that you have to ask is, who has the best physical financial mindset that's going to align with what I think we ought to be doing with our money? Are you going to find anybody that's going to hit your idea? Probably not. So what chess move are you going to make that puts a candidate in place that best aligns with what it is you're supposed to do? Okay? That's money. That's an issue. Guns is an issue. Second Amendment, always going to be talked about. You're going to hear about it. You'll hear about it. You'll probably hear about that debate tomorrow night if you get to listen. Of course, I know if you're working at Face of Fear, you'll be here, so we'll try to get you out in time for the debate, but we'll be here. But guns. But please understand that one of the things that happens, I don't care where you are with guns, to be honest with you. I don't care where you are with guns. That doesn't matter to me at all. But let's be honest about guns. Guns don't kill people. The one who's holding the gun kills people. The gun issue is inherently, at the root of it, an issue that has to do with evil. Okay? You can debate it. You can legislate it. There is one answer to evil, and that is the love of God. But a gun has never killed anybody. Now, I know that someone's going to hear this, and they're going to write me, and they're going to go, but it's the instrument of the person, and it's the evil person holding it. So the problem that you've got to deal with is there's a heart issue out there. There is an evil that is very alive and well in the world that we're living in, and it is battling, and it is trying to pull us up and down that cultural line. And that is a battle that we are waging all the time. Our founding fathers in the Constitution put that in there, and that is something that they valued. Now let's go back to our founding fathers. What did they do? Did they understand the importance of it? Did they put it in? You can hear people debate about it. But here's the deal. If you don't like it and you don't think people ought to have guns, then change the Constitution. But until someone does, you don't undercut the Constitution for the reasons that we talked about earlier that the founders put into place. And if you don't like that, then you go and you grab somebody and you vote for somebody that wants to change it and blow it up. And if you do like that, then you look for someone that's going to defend that. But understand at the end of the day, the issue is evil, not gun laws. Because, I mean, I know you hate to hear this because I know it does sound like a talking point. It's not a talking point. Bad guys will still get guns. They always have. They always will. And they will. And if they don't find a gun, they'll find something else to use. But it is one of those problems where the real issue is evil. And so there is a tendency for mainstream media and politicians to blame guns for the increasing levels of violence in America. The real problem is hate in the human heart.
Well, they can't admit evil.
Huh?
They can't admit.
No, you can't admit it's evil. You can't admit it's evil. But the real problem is hate in the human heart. So for us as followers, we are constantly on this mission to touch and change the world with love of Christ. So we constantly have to address the hate in hearts and meet that with the love of Jesus. And can you do that while you preserve your right to bear arms? Of course you can. Of course you can. But you have to find a candidate then that has that some kind of hold or grasp on what really is the issue and what really is to do, because there are some social problems that need to be addressed. There is no doubt about it, and that certainly is related to gun violence. But still, at the core of it is there is an evil that is at work in our culture today, and evil in the human heart is a problem. Gun is just a delivery system. If you think you can take away that delivery system, I don't believe you can. But if you believe it, that's right. Fight for it. Find a candidate that will do it. And there's people out there that have very strong opinions on this. Somewhere in the middle of it, we have to find kingdom-based solutions that keep our country from ripping at the seams. And this is where the followers of Christ have to step up and have a voice. If we don't, we're going to leave it to the 535 that we elect and let them be the agents of change. But I got news for you. From what I've seen lately, they're not real they're not real good. I mean, not real impressive. But guns definitely is an issue. Are there other issues? Sure there are. How about the environment? That's actually one of the topics of the debate tomorrow. I've told you this before in another study, so you can always go back and listen to that if you want. Let me give you a couple of references and go look at them later because we're going to run out of time. 2 Peter 3, 10 through 13 gives you what is global warming in a biblical sense. Revelation 22, 1 through 5 talks about the new heaven and new earth. Here's the deal. God is not going to let planet Earth be destroyed or destroy itself. But when we hit into end times, there is a biblical description that when you read it, it sounds scary. It is global warming on steroids, but it's part of that final battle. And then a new heaven and a new earth is made, which means this one is not going to be destroyed. It's just going to be remade. And we will live here together through eternity. So if you're a follower, you don't have to worry about global warming. Now, does it mean we have to take responsibility and take care of the environment? Yes. But you cannot fall into the trap of worshiping the creation instead of worshiping the Creator. And so when you're looking for a candidate, what candidate has an idea of how to use successfully the resources that God has given us with a mindfulness of the fact that there are generations yet to come and be a good caretaker without worshiping it? And there's a balance to that. And that's the environment in a nutshell. Are there other issues? Sure. But wait, there's more. Abortion. an issue. And here we go again. It's one of those things where when you read Matthew 18, 3 through 5, Jesus talks about welcoming a child, you welcome me. There is something very special about that passage that reminds us of the value that God places on kids. If you go back to Jeremiah 1:5, it talks about the fact that God knows us and he has known us and he's knit us together from before we were born, while we were still in the womb. And I know we had a talk about the Holocaust and how you exterminate people. And so the issue you got to get to is, do you as a follower believe that an unborn child is people? Because if you do, the numbers in America are staggering right now. I believe that abortion is a big issue for followers. I believe abortion is a big issue for candidates. And it's not how anybody's framed it. It's not really about pro-life, pro-choice. See, when you frame an issue, you own the issue. This is about right and wrong and life itself. And this is about the value of life. And it's not just for us as followers to say, well, I'm pro-life or I'm pro-choice. But if we're followers and we are pro-life in the political sense, then you also are pro-adoption. Which means that we as the kingdom of God, we as the children of God, have to take some responsibility to step up and say, you know what? We want these kids because we value them. It's not enough for me to say you shouldn't do that. The flip side of that is, no, I'll take this child. And you can't do one without the other. And that's where the Christian community lost the issue, by the way. We said what we were against, but it took us a long time to start saying what we were for. And so you can't really be against abortion if you're not incredibly all in on adoption. And it doesn't mean you have to adopt a child, but it does mean that you have to be an advocate for finding and helping make that happen and greasing the tracks. And where better for these kids to end up as the people of God in the church? And I'm passionate about that. Because I think it may be the defining issue that keeps us from either being like Germany, and it may be that defining issue where God holds us accountable as a nation. It's that big. And you can't get away from that. And so you've got to find a candidate that doesn't pander for votes, but has a conviction about that. Israel, oh man, we're out of time. Israel. It's certainly an issue. The Bible's clear. You know, I need candidates that are pro-Israel because God makes a promise. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. I think America exists because we are Israel's biggest ally. I don't know why God likes that little plot of land so much. It's in the middle of nowhere. No, it's horrible. I mean, it can't, you know. But yet I do know this. He's coming back, and that's where he's going to put his foot down at. And he has said, I've chosen this land. And so, ask yourself, where do the candidates sit on Israel? Not just lip service, but what have they done? And this is where you start getting into party platforms, and you have to start really looking and digging, because you know what? No one wants to step up and be a big boy or big girl about this. Mm-hmm. And they do it. What do they think about family? What do they think about marriage? What do they think about compromise and working together? Mm-hmm. What do they think about religious freedom? See, I don't need a president to be a good Christian. I don't need a president that proclaims his love for Jesus. I don't need a president that goes to church. I need a president who will protect my right to do what I do for a living and do for you what I do, and your right to be here and be a part of and do the ministries that we do without government interference. I need someone to protect our religious liberties. That's what the founders wanted. They can be as pagan as the day is long as they protect liberties. But be very careful as you kind of move through this, and don't get caught up in the talking points. Cut through it and figure out where the issues lie. And again, if you disagree with something I said that was an important issue, then that's okay too. That's great. Be able to biblically kind of move in and defend what you believe. And that's great. I think I could probably defend biblically what I told you. And so my job is the same as yours. I got to figure out the candidate that gets us there. And in this room, I guarantee you, we're covering about 3 candidates at least for president. And we're probably covering some other candidates in some of these other races. When it's all said and done, don't panic. God's still got this. And it's going to be okay, no matter what. Remember what we said. We can survive a bad politician. What we can't survive is a group of people that are willing to be led by fools. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you love us. We thank you that you give us the opportunity to live in this place. It's an amazing place. And we thank you for the freedoms that we have. Help us to be responsible. Help us to just pray through who it is we're supposed to vote for, and help us to cast our vote and find that place that we can most align with you and who you are and what you've created us to be. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.